Hi guys, this is my last weekly update on this trip, the last one overseas, which I'm rather excited about because today is, I think, pretty much bang on 6 weeks since I left home. So it's going to be 6 weeks and one day by the time I actually get back, such is the joy of international travel. Anyway, a lot has happened this week, so I'm going to give you a little update on a few things I've been doing event-wise, because that's been a big week, and then blog-wise, because that's been a big week, and then there's been a story, which is just one of those head-slapping ones, which I want to talk about here. So, travel-wise, I came to you last week from Southampton in the UK. So I wrapped things up there, came back over to Amsterdam, got a bike, rode the bike around, which is what you do in Amsterdam. It was actually really nice. I love coming back to Holland in part because of the riding, because you can just go anywhere and it's easy and bikes are like king. So that was cool. And then I went and did some training for TomTom. So this is TomTom, the GPS folks. And they obviously do a lot of things other than GPS these days. They're doing a lot of stuff with cars, which is kind of awesome. So that makes it it's a really interesting time for them because obviously they want to try and make sure that things in their cars actually stay secure, which apparently is very important as we connect our cars more and we put more tech and more stuff in them. So that was great. And then I did a user group for those guys on Monday night, which was epic. It was in this really awesome theater in Amsterdam. And we had, I think, 200 something people come along to it. In total, I spoke for, I think it was a couple of hours, sort of an hour and a half or something worth of talking, like presentation talking, and then just heaps of questions as well. And they had one of their guys speak before me, a bloke called Heiko, talked about what's happening with cars and automotive, sort of autonomous vehicles, which was really kind of interesting. So a bunch of stuff that I learned out of that. And just one of those events where it was just really nicely ran, lots of interesting people, good chats. So I was really, really happy doing that event. Similar to the one in London the last week before, which was sort of similar in size and professionalism. So I've done a few of those now. I'll talk about another one in a moment. So I did that one, 2 days training there, had Wednesday off in Amsterdam, rode a bike around, and then headed down to Nieuwegein, which I now know how to say for the people who were telling me that my Dutch was terrible before, which probably still is. Regardless, I came down here, which is where I am now, in a hotel room because there's not really anywhere immediately around me outdoors that's kind of nice to go and record this. Plus, I got up early and I'm in the hotel. It's easy. And it's quiet. So anyway, I came down to here and I'm here with Ordina. Now, I had seen Ordina in Leuven in Belgium back in January as well. And this is sort of the Netherlands edition, if you like, of Ordina. And it's quite a big setup here, actually. They've got a few quite large buildings here. And I did a talk on Wednesday night for a whole heap of people. And again, it was somewhere north of 200. Very, very well run. They did an interesting thing, which I wasn't quite sure how it would go, where when people were signing up to come to the event, free event, they're like, hey, upload your photo. We'll do sort of facial recognition when you come in. Now, I didn't know this. And the first I found out about it was when multiple people sent me messages going, you know, we're going to a security conference and there's like privacy and stuff like that. And they're asking for our photo. Are you really sure? And I was like, oh, that's an interesting choice of thing to do for an event like this. Now, as it turns out, it was all optional. You didn't have to do it. And probably about 50% of people did. But what they then did is, when you walked into the building, there's a sort of a screen and a camera, and you turn up there and it does the facial recognition thing and it matches you to the photo that you uploaded. And then it uses your email address to check, have I been pwned, and tell you on the screen how pwned you are, and then print on your label how many times you had been pwned, which was actually kind of cool. Like I don't think I've ever seen have I been pwned tied into any sort of biometric implementation. So those guys actually did a pretty cool job. And it was just an epically good night, like really, really nice people. I met a few people that I'd really wanted to meet for some time as well. You guys know who you are. And that was really cool. So they did that Wednesday night, and then I've been doing a workshop for them yesterday being Thursday, and today, Friday. I've got to go have some breakfast, do the workshop, and then I'm on the plane and I'm home. So that will be the end of the trip, and it's probably a good time to go, not just because of, frankly, how long it's been, but also because all my stuff seems to be breaking. So I lost a wheel off my suitcase, and the suitcase has been all the way around the world many times. My backpack, a zip's come off, and I'm about one zip away from not being able to actually carry my laptops in there anymore if that one self-destructs as well. My mouse is dead. Even my microphone is dead. The little fluffy thing came off the end. So, yeah, it's probably time to go back and replenish supplies. Now, be that as it may, it's been a really busy week, and it's been very busy not just because of the travel and the speaking stuff, but because I have written quite a few things. And I'll sort of start with the easy stuff. So I wrote on Monday about getting my MVP renewal, which was awesome. So this was the seventh time I've gotten the MVP award. So the first time was in 2011. And I just wrote very briefly about how it wasn't something that I knew was coming back then. I mean, now it's sort of something which, if I keep doing the same thing, you normally expect to get renewed. But certainly back then, it was a big surprise. And it has been such an enormously important part of what I have done since that time. So it's helped me sort of build my independence and my profile and everything else. It's given me some credibility and some authority, for want of a better term, which I may not have had to the same extent without it. So that was a really important thing. And then just coincidentally this week, the talk that I would have spoken about several weekly updates ago that I did in NDC in Oslo, about Hack Your Career, that's now out on YouTube as well. So I'll make sure I link to that. And it's really interesting now watching the public reaction as people go through and watch it. And it's fantastic. People are coming back with wonderful things to say. Maybe less so about me, but more so about what it gets them to think about in terms of their career. So for example, I read one this morning where someone had picked up on the point where I'm saying, look, every time I was doing something, say in my old corporate job, I would leverage that multiple times over as other material that I could write about or speak about or create courses on. So that sort of stuff is the kind of thing that's allowed me to really leverage my time. So I'll put that that video in the notes as well. Go and check that out. Okay, what else? I actually have a list today because it was kind of crazy. All right, password strength indicators. Now I saw this going down. This is weird, like I remember where I was when things happened, but not when it was. So I saw this discussion happening when I was in Trondheim in Norway, which must have been towards the, I don't know, second week of my trip. And this was someone contacting Argos. So this is sort of the British supermarket chain, saying, hey, look, your password manager's a bit screwy, or rather your password requirements are a bit screwy. And what it all boiled down to is that Argos was limiting the length of the password to 20 characters. Not unusual, right? We see plenty of sites with arbitrary upper limits on character length. And, you know, so that's sort of same old, same old. And then the guy links them to a password strength indicator, which explains that as you add more characters, the password gets stronger. And this is effectively just simple mathematics, right? It's like, look, it's the total number of characters and the combinations and permutations and everything goes up. So more characters of more types, etc., from a mathematical basis is good. And when I saw that, I was like, oh, I don't know if that was a good idea because I can see where this is going to go now. So what they've done is they've gone and checked this little tutorial, this little video about strong passwords. And there's a bit there where the password gets to 20 characters. And it says, oh, it'll take like 350. And then I don't know what the number is because there's lots of commas after it. But basically some inconceivably large amount of time to crack it. Ergo, you should be fine with a 20 character password. And it just sort of got me thinking that this is such a representation of how poor password strength indicators are when they rely purely on mathematics. And the reasons for that are you can have many, many bad passwords that are even up to 20 characters. If you have dictionary, let's not say dictionary words. Let's say if you have passphrases, which are common words, to be or not to be. If you have a quote from The Simpsons or something like this, that are common enough that they will get built into password dictionaries and used for cracking. And the premise of there being some fixed amount of time for cracking totally neglects the fact that there is this human behavior which fundamentally chooses passwords that people can remember, that they're familiar with. The other thing it fundamentally neglects is when you say 350 gazillion trillion million, for argument's sake, years to be cracked, is that with like MD5 or is it with bcrypt? Because there's many, many millions of factor, or a factor of many, many million times slower between a good bcrypt implementation and MD5. And that's kind of an important number. Now, people say, look, it's not meant to be exact science, right? It's meant to be like an indication. More characters of more randomness are good. But the problem is that when you justify what is arguably a short arbitrary length in order to, on the basis of, well, you could still have a strong password, it neglects the human nature, right? So it neglects the fact that people are still going to create crap passwords within that length, and you're going to stop people who want to do good things making longer passwords. Now, I allude in there to something I've got coming up where I reference NIST, National Institute of Standards and Technology, who've recently come out with a lot of password guidance, which includes stuff like allow at least 64 characters in your password. Interesting how they managed to come up with that number. I've got to read it in a little bit more detail yet. Regardless, allow lots. Now, look, there is that and many other things that they have said as part of their guidance, including allowing password managers and things like this, which incidentally, even just like 10 minutes ago, I was quote tweeting a bank saying, we don't allow password managers. It breaks our terms and conditions and, oh, geez. Anyway, I've got a bigger piece to write on that. And there's a lot of thought going into this, so it's not going to be something I do till I get home, which isn't very far away. And I'm going to write a big piece on that, and I'm also going to provide some tooling. So I've got something in mind that I just need to get home and think about a little bit more carefully. But I think that's going to be great. So stay tuned for that. I'll hopefully have it out in July. Now, the other thing. The AA in the UK. Now, for those of you not from the UK, the AA is effectively their breakdown service. Your car stops working, your battery's flat. Little van comes out, someone gets out and they fix your battery or your tire or whatever it is that needs fixing. All very good. Here's where it goes wrong. When I was in the UK, now this would have been last week, early last week, I noticed a bunch of people saying, hey, we've just gotten password resets from the AA website, which is, okay, that's every now and then that happens. Maybe someone's just manually entering their email address, but it was a lot of people. And the AA was going, look, you know, nothing to see here, so on and so forth. And they may have been right. But amongst all of this discussion of have you been hacked, and that's why the resets are coming, someone gets in touch with me and they say, the AA had 13 gigabytes worth of their data exposed months ago. And here's the DM conversation I had with them, telling them about it. And here's where they say they're basically just following internal protocol. So he'd actually said, look, have you advised people? Have you let people know? And they've gone, yeah, they didn't go, yeah, this is the trick. They have said something kind of evasive around the lines of we've followed internal protocol. The bottom line is that when you read the message, it's pretty clear that they didn't let people know, even though they knew that the data was exposed. Now, I sort of got this snippet of a DM and I shared this on Twitter and a bunch of people got kind of upset and the AA started saying effectively that I've got to be careful how I put this because they're communicating in such a bizarre, obscure way. It was along the lines of it has been handled and protocol has been followed. Never saying that they did notify people, which they didn't. Never saying that they didn't notify people, which they didn't notify people. But just a very odd kind of communication and people are going, well, look, what's going on? So anyway, I managed to take a look at the data. And this was data that was provided to me by the person who originally reported this. And they said, look, you know, here's what is in there. And when I looked at it, I went, well, hang on a second. There's like 117,000 people in here. And not only that, but we've got names, phone numbers, addresses, and partial card data. There are the last four digits of the car. Card. It's a car thing, but it's a card. Last four digits of the card type, whether it's an Amex or a Visa or whatever, and also the expiry date. Now, there are obfuscated CVV fields, so we've just got stars in there, and the first digits of the card are all obfuscated, so it's only the last four digits. And yes, they can store this data, they can store it unencrypted under PCI, that's fine. However, if you lose it, you really should tell people you've lost it. And this is where the rub is, because even after this data has been provided to me, and I've said on the Twitters, you've lost card data, you need to let people know, they've gone, no, we haven't. And you'll see in this blog post I wrote, which I'll talk about the context of it in a moment, you'll see that within this dialogue, they're effectively denying that any card data was lost. Now, I don't know if this is just a selective interpretation of the term card data, and if they think that card data means PAN, that like the primary account number, the whole thing. In which case, no, the entire card number was not lost, but parts of it were. And for the sake of avoiding ambiguity, this is the point where they should be saying, all right, here's exactly what happened. Data was exposed. We locked it down because this was a database backup published to a publicly facing website. Like, let's not forget the severity of what happens when you do that. Here's what we had exposed. Here's what we're doing about it. Not stick your head in the sand and just go, nah, nothing to see here, nothing to see here. Because what happens is it gains momentum. And in the last few days, there's been a lot of news about it. It's been on the BBC. It's been in a lot of the big press. It's certainly been in the InfoSec news. To make it even worse, I was just listening to Graham Cleary, another security bloke. He's a proper journalist in the UK. I think he's a proper journalist. Who writes quite a bit, and he wrote a piece a couple of days ago where he showed a redacted portion of the data. Now, let me just be clear about what I mean by redacted. It was basically just an XML node which said card data or something like that, and then under there was card number and, you know, lots of asterisks, and then the last four digits, and most of them are obfuscated. The same with expiry, and then the same with type. So there's basically nothing on there. There's absolutely nothing usable. There's a couple of numbers outside of any context whatsoever. So outside the context of an individual, for example. And he got contacted by the AA saying that he might be in breach of the Computer Misuse Act, which is absolutely bloody ridiculous. Because what he's done is he's posted something which is in no way of any use whatsoever. He's certainly not out there redistributing sets of data around, as far as I know. And somehow someone's come along and said, hey, you could be violating an act which is designed to stop people from abusing other people's data. Like, this is ridiculous. Get your head out of the sand. So this was enormously frustrating. So I wrote this piece about basically about stages of grief. And this was the five stages of data grief, data breach grief. And it was something I was thinking about. I was at breakfast the other day actually reading Graham's response. And we had a little bit of a chat, and I sort of got a bit of insight into how this was communicated. And I was thinking, what we're actually seeing here is the same thing that we see almost every time there's a large data breach, and people go through the same phases, right? The same phases of grief, stages of grief. So a good example here is that very often it first happens, and there is denial. It's like, nah, it didn't happen. And we see this with the AA. You know, they went through denying the credit card. No, no credit card, nothing to see here. I got the Iraqi communication minister, you know, the thing where he's like, nothing to see here. Because this is what it is. It's like the world is burning down around you and you're just going, this is all fine. So there's this denial phase. And then, of course, you move into anger. And this is like the sort of stages of grief when a loved one is sick or dying or something like this, except it's your data instead. So there's this denial phase, which is certainly what they were in a few days ago, where they're going, no, this can't be true. And in fact, they're saying, no, it's not true. Now, this puts them in a very, very difficult predicament because they know that the data was exposed. They're on the record via DM having acknowledged it. They cleaned it up. They've acknowledged following a process, so they know about it. They elected not to tell anyone, and they do know what's in there too because they would have seen it. Now, this is going to make life very hard because they're going to have to answer some questions once it comes to discussions with the ICO. And the ICO have said, yes, we are investigating this, or we're looking into it, I think is the word they used. Now, the ICO is the Information Commissioner's Office in the UK. So that's the Data Protection Authority for the UK. And when incidents like this happen, they get involved and potentially levy penalties as well. So they fined TalkTalk £400,000 after their incident in late 2015 when they lost a lot of data after getting hacked by children. If I was the AA right now, I wouldn't be lying. It's not going to go down well. It is not a good look. And as I was saying here, I mean, Graham and I have seen this thing play out so many times with so many companies. This is not our first rodeo. I appreciate for the AA and whoever is communicating this, they probably haven't been through this process before. They don't know how it's going to end. Now, we do know how it's going to end, and it's going to go into these other stages. I've said, look, there's inevitably this point where they get into bargaining, right? This is like the third stage of data breach grief. And they're going to get to the point here where they're going to tell people, look, this is what's happened. You can trust us now. They're going to try and rebuild confidence. And the only way they're going to do that is to come clean, because what they're doing at the moment is they're making it worse and worse and worse. And the more they say, we didn't have an incident, or at least if the more they try and downplay the severity, the more trust goes down. Now, I'm no expert in the automobile association space or the come out and repair your car space, but I would imagine that trusting the people who are there to try and get you moving again is kind of important. So they've got to rebuild that trust. Stage four of grief is depression. And this is probably what they're going to transition into in a few days once they actually acknowledge what's happened, where they're now going to have to try and figure out the entire scope. They're going to have to go through the process with the ICO, have hard questions answered, take a good hard look at how they actually had this cock up in the first place. And this is not going to be fun. We have seen companies release people from their duties as a result of this. Ashley Madison, perfect example, CEO went. We've seen other organizations as well where these incidents have caused people to exit the organization, particularly when they've been shown to be negligent or deceitful. Now, I don't know if that's going to be the case with the AA, but it doesn't look good from the outside. And then finally, stage five, acceptance. They are going to have to eventually accept that this has happened. And they will have to acknowledge it, they will have to contact customers, and they'll have to let them know. Now, if they don't, it's going to continue getting press whilst everyone says, well, what's happened? Have they let everyone know? And I think more than anything, what I'd really like to see the AA do, and I'm sure that this is what their customers would like to see as well, is for them to come out and be transparent. And maybe an apology as well. And there was just a little bit of a hint of that in one of the emails, or rather one of the tweets. And they need to sort of come out and say, look, we screwed up. We're going to own this. We're sorry. We misled you about the card data. Here's what actually happened. And I link in here to the way the Red Cross Blood Service in Australia handled their incident, which began in a very, very similar fashion. So this began with their data backed up to a publicly facing website where other people could come along and download it. So it began the same way. The difference is the Red Cross owned that from the outset, where they said, okay, here's what's happened. This is the full extent of your data. CEO was up out there in front of the press 72 hours later saying, we are really sorry. And I actually link in the story about this to a talk I did where I actually show the Red Cross CEO up there apologizing. And she was very sincere, and it was the right message, and it was received as well as it could have been under the circumstances. So I guess to round it out, where we're at now, as far as I know, they haven't contacted people. As far as I know, they're still denying the card data exposure. I did note that I think pretty much since Graham's blog post, they haven't publicly said no card data again. So maybe they're sort of on the road to recovery here. But I would still like to see them actually acknowledge the full extent of this. So that may have a little way to play out. Let's see how that goes. Last thing before I wrap up is I am being sponsored this week by Symantec. So many of you know the Symantec name. They're a very sort of large player in the InfoSec space. They've been there for a very long time. They've come on board to sponsor me for some number of weeks over the remaining year. So I'm really glad to have a totally new sponsor on, someone who is quite different. Interestingly, I wasn't quite sure how people would perceive seeing Symantec up there on the top of my blog, because they are one of these large incumbent players. And sometimes people had negative connotations about that. And about some of the products it is that they produce. But I was really, really surprised and very happy, to be honest, to see a heap of people say, hey, that's awesome. You know, like getting a name like Symantec who was willing to pay a bit of money to have their name up there on the top and sit there for some number of weeks is really cool. So big thanks to those guys. And again, it's thank you very much for helping this this sponsorship model and the lack of the ads work so well. And there will be a lot of material coming out on that blog sitting under that semantic name in the coming weeks as I get home and I've got time to actually do a lot more stuff. So thanks everyone for watching and for following me through the whole sort of Europe trip. Next week, I will be home somewhere comfortable in my nice, warm, sunny winter. Thanks, guys. See you soon.